All right, today in this interview, we want to cover missionaries and taxes and go through a lot of key points that are going to help you when it comes time to file your taxes. We've got with us Brian Stevens, and I'm going to let Kelly Koski, one of our missionaries that have been with us about 30 years, introduce him in a moment. But Brian Stevens has the accounting firm O'Brien and Kelly in Bend, Oregon. And I'm excited that they're here with their expertise to help us. By the way, all the contact information for Brian Stevens, the O'Brien and Kelly LLC accounting firm, can be found in our resource library. So those of you listening to this interview, you're going to want to go to worldoutreach.org/resources. That's www.worldoutreach.org/resources, and all their contact information is available there. And they offer a discount to WOM missionaries, which we do appreciate their graciousness in that. So they can help you in a tremendous way to file your taxes. You're going to want to take notes during this interview. Let me start by giving a general disclaimer. World Outreach is a missionary agency. We're not an accounting firm. That's why I've reached out to Brian Stevens for his expertise in this interview, because so many missionaries contact us every year. World Outreach missionaries, how do I file my taxes? What do I do? And the answer is that the tax code changes all the time. That's why you need a professional. You need a professional tax preparer like Brian and his accounting firm. There's no cookie cutter solution that's going to fit every case. That's why you need someone that can look at your particular situation, the amount of money that you bring in, etc. So let me just say this. The small fee that you might pay to an accounting firm like O'Brien and Kelly or whoever you might use to help prepare your taxes, that will be worth every penny, trust me. I really feel sorry for people that go online and try to use a program and do it themselves. I think they're missing out on the expertise on how to possibly minimize your taxes in avenues and ways that the IRS allows. That's why you need people that stay up with this stuff. All right, Kelly Koski, one of our missionaries that's been with us 30 years out of South Africa, personal friends with Brian. Kelly, why don't you introduce Brian Stevens and tell us a little bit how he's helped you with your taxes.
Sure. It's good to be with you, Jason. As some of you may know, I've been a missionary for 30 years working with a cult of people in Africa. But prior to that, I also was a CPA, and when I became a missionary, I realized that you're a different duck, you're a different person, and your tax issues were different from the typical wage earner or businessman. And I really had trouble finding an expert that could advise me on everything from foreign tax credits and exclusions and what I could deduct and how to convert exchange rates. And doing a lot of research, I came upon Mr. Brian Stevens of O'Brien and Kelly, and he was the expert on not just foreign workers living and working abroad, but also missionaries. And what also I appreciate about him is he's a born-again Christian. And to go to him, and he advised me on so many things that I was missing. I didn't realize I could do so much more, and there's a lot of loopholes and benefits that are very legal. And so I went to him. Whatever the fee was, he saved me way more than his fee. And it's my honor today to introduce Brian, who is an enrolled agent with the IRS. He's maintained a very, very successful firm and a interstate 1031 transfer corporation. So he's very successful, and he knows what he's talking about. And not to take any more time, I'll just turn it over to you, Brian. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks, Jason. My name is Brian, and Wow, that was quite an introduction there. I like to call myself a follower of Jesus, like you guys all are, and I love taxes. I have a soft heart for missionaries, and even though the larger part of my practice is for non-missionaries, there's a real soft place in my heart for the missionaries, and I'd love to be of service to you. Jason, where do you want me to start in this process?
All right, let's start by talking about upfront how World Outreach Ministries is set up. A lot of the missionaries listening to this come to us from sending agencies, and I want to talk about how we're set up. We've been a 501c3 nonprofit since 1979. So this coming year, we're coming to the end of the year now. This next year will be our 38th year as a ministry, official 501c3 ministry with the IRS. And we're set up as a service agency versus a sending agency. And let me explain that. And Brian, I want you to come in on this in a moment. But a lot of mission groups, they actually ordain, commission, send out the missionary to specific places, and the missionary performs duties that are assigned by the home office. We're not set up that way. In other words, we don't place or send missionaries to the field. They're all independent mission workers. They come to us requesting administrative help, and that's what we do. So it's very important to understand that at the end of the year, the workers that we're helping, they receive the form 1099 versus a W-2. And Brian, I think a lot of people are familiar, they're very familiar with the W-2. If they've ever had a secular job, most people have, they get a W-2 where the taxes are withheld. Well, a form 1099 is a different type of form that declares to the worker and also to the IRS how much money we pass along to that missionary worker. Can you comment a little bit on that and why it's important for them to understand it, and then where they go with that 1099? I mean, it's basically the same path as a W-2, but they have a little bit more responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. When they get a 1099, that means they are an independent contractor, an entrepreneur, a business person, as opposed to an employee.
Which could also be a mission worker. You said business, but
exactly.
It's an independent mission worker versus an employee of a mission organization that's dictating to them what to do.
That's exactly it. If the organization is controlling how they do their mission services, they're saying you need to go here where they can be hired or fired. That would be an employee relationship, which you would get a W-2. Because they're independent, they get a 1099. And what that means, first, it's actually good to get a 1099 because independent contractors almost always pay less taxes than employees.
Wow, but that's good.
There's responsibilities that come with getting a 1099, and that's you're a business person, and you have to think a little bit differently. You have to think in terms of, I've got to report this income, but I've got to report also my deductions that bring down that income. An employee simply reports his wages. There's no deductions that come against his wages, any business deductions. And there, so that's a big difference. It is actually a good thing from that standpoint. Go ahead, Jason.
Well, I want to hit on those deductions in just a moment, but let's just state what to us is the obvious, but we have to realize that there'll be mission workers listening to this that are fresh out of Bible school. Some of them are young, and they have these misconceptions that, hey, because I'm in the ministry, I don't have to worry about my taxes. And that's nothing could be further from the truth. Regardless of whether you're in the ministry or not, you have to file every year, and you have to make sure that you pay your federal, Medicare, Social Security, state taxes that you may owe. Now, there are deductions, and like you said, I really like that, that the responsibility for an independent missionary or independent contractor, as the government would call them, but an independent missionary, is they have to make sure they take advantage of whatever qualifying deductions that they may be able to take advantage of that the IRS allows. And they can bring their tax exposure down if those expenses are qualifying. So those of you that are listening to this recording, you're in the ministry that does not exempt you from filing your taxes every year. You have to do that. And furthermore, some of our families, you know, their situations are where possibly they're older and they also have Social Security income. And they, of course, they have to report that retirement income. Some have already had a career in the military, and they launched out to the mission field later, so they have military retirement income. Some of our missionaries have actual investments with stocks, perhaps in an inheritance, or who knows how it came to them. But there's interest on that. So that's why we said in the beginning, there's no cookie cutter solution. Everybody's situation is different. Some are married. Some are not married. If they're married, they get a tax break in a sense. If they have children. And there's just so many scenarios. That's why you need a professional tax preparer like Brian or someone. But we have a relationship with Brian Stevens and O'Brien and Kelly because they offer, well, first of all, his heart. You heard his heart. And also the endorsement by Kelly Koski, who's been with us for 30 years. Pretty much whatever Kelly says, I go with. So we have that relationship. But also the expertise and the fact they give World Outreach Missionaries a reduced fee is awesome. Now, let's talk about possible ways to minimize their taxes. Those of you, listen, you're a missionary. And maybe you haven't thought in this terms, but you have expenses. You have airline tickets, printing bills, a campaign that you sponsored. I don't know exactly the qualifying expenses, but it's called the Schedule C form. Brian, talk a little bit about the Schedule C and how that possibly might help some of our workers.
Sure, Jason. I think first it's important to know that there's more than one kind of tax that people are required to pay. One is the federal tax, the income tax that we're all familiar with. The second is the Social Security tax,
okay,
also called the self-employment tax. And the third one could be a state income tax for some missionaries that are filing state tax returns. And so when you're talking about trying to reduce taxes, you always kind of have to look at, I want to reduce my federal taxes, perhaps my Social Security taxes that I'm paying, and maybe my state taxes. Your question was, what kind of deductions can you report on a Schedule C that can reduce these federal and state and Social Security taxes?
Now, let me just insert this. A Schedule C is just a separate form that goes along with the 1040 tax, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, so it's a separate form that, and if they don't know to use that, then they miss out, possibly.
Yes, that's an attachment. And a lot of times, if you go online and file a tax return, you get a cheaper rate if you don't take any deductions. You don't want to do that. You want to take your deductions on the Schedule C.
Okay.
And the taxes that missionaries typically pay, they pay a Social Security tax, which is 15.3% of their missionary net income. For example, let's say as a missionary you earned $30,000 this last year. You got a 1099 from World Outreach for $30,000. You may then, if you just reported that on your tax return, you would find out that you owe $4,500 or 15% of that amount into the Social Security system. But if instead you had $30,000 of income and you had, say, $15,000 of expenses, that means your net income is only $15,000, which means your Social Security tax you'd pay would be $2,200.
Wow, that's huge. That one point is huge.
Yes, and so it's that's why it's so important to gather expenses. The other tax is an income tax. Very few missionaries will pay any income tax. And we'll get into the reasons why, because of this foreign income exclusion that they're allowed, which we'll talk about later. But very few people will pay income taxes because of this exclusion.
Now, they still have to file. They still have to file the paperwork.
Yes.
Okay.
All missionaries will have to pay the Social Security tax, which this exclusion doesn't apply to. You mentioned that. Who has to file an income tax return? Generally, a single person that makes more than $10,000 or a married couple that makes more than $20,000 has to file a U.S. tax return, assuming they're a U.S. citizen or a U.S. resident. That's the general rule, but there's another rule for self-employed people, independent contractors that get 1099s. They have to file a tax return if they make $400 or more.
Okay, so virtually all World Outreach missionaries, virtually all missionaries have to file if they're getting the 1099.
Yes, if it's $400 or more, because of that Social Security tax thing that we're talking
right.
about.
Right, okay.
Why they have to file.
Right, the Schedule C, talk to me a little bit more about that.
Okay, so the type of expenses that the missionaries want to be thinking about, it's kind of, you know, in secular terms, they're entrepreneurs, they're business people, they have revenues, they're out fundraising or talking at churches or whatever, and those are all expenses. They also have ministry expenses. Maybe they're giving money to people, they're taking people out, giving them meals, they have an office in their home. There's all sorts of expenses that they're allowed to be a deduct. I'll give you a list of sample expenses.
Okay.
You give gifts to people of the church that further your ministry activities. Education expenses, you took language lessons. Travel expenses, the travel to the U.S.
Airline, taxi, all that.
Yes, airline. Meals, typically, people that travel away from their base take a meal allowance of a per day amount. They'll say, well, last year I was 46 days away from the base. Those would be, you could take a per day allowance of about $50 a day. And if maybe you're and your spouse are in the ministry, that'd be $100 a day.
So in other words, if they're out on a campaign, out in the bush on a campaign, away doing a crusade,
yeah.
Feed the children, outreach, a medical clinic, whatever, that would fall into that category.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Someone might get $10,000, let's say it's paid to World Outreach, and that $10,000 is going to, you know, designated to buy materials for a building or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That $10,000 expense for materials would then be an example of an expense.
Okay, now let me insert this. I don't want to dominate the conversation, but wow, you just hit on something. I have in front of me a letter that came in about a week ago, and I want to read this for the sake of those listening, and I want you to remember what you just said about funds that are used for a building project could possibly be put in the schedule, see if they're qualified. Let me just read this, and I'm going to leave out his name. I just want you to see, this is a real letter, an email that we got from one of our World Outreach missionaries. Greetings from the States. Now, he is here in the States on deputation. He's raising more money. I'm taking a couple of weeks off from my ministry in blank. It's in Central America, I'll say that, to visit with my family here in the States and rest a little. I have been needing to write you about my tax situation, and am now just getting around to do it. Last year, I helped open a new group home, which we have named the Isaiah House, for street boys we work with in blank country, which I have been in charge of since then. Because of this new part of the ministry, I've been receiving significant donations designated specifically for the Isaiah House that were not used for personal use. These donations all were sent through my WOM account, which I didn't think would affect me until my 2015 tax return was just completed and I realized I am being taxed on all these donations. Now that tells me that whoever might have been helping him, or if he was doing it himself, didn't know the information that we're here discussing. He goes on to say, thankfully, a generous family from one of my supporting churches offered to help me pay this large sum of taxes, over $3,000. So I would like to discuss with you what options I have to avoid this sort of penalty in the future. Although 2016 is likely going to be even greater problem. Do you think there is a way that we could separate personal and ministry donations so that I am not penalized for often larger ministry donations when paying my personal taxes? Could I either let you know what the donations are for the Isaiah ministry, or would you set up a new account? Let me know what advice you have, because I would like to stay with World Outreach if possible. So you see the dilemma that this guy is describing, which is so common. And a lot of the missionaries think that they've got to have a whole separate account, and we don't need to do that because of the Schedule C. So pick it back up, Brian, and kind of address that issue again.
Yeah, that's a great example. That person should not have paid $1 more in taxes this year than his prior year.
It's sad. He's already done it.
Yeah.
Evidently.
The $10,000 that was received was used for furthering his ministry and or the Lord's ministry, and so therefore whatever came in went out, and there shouldn't have been any net income. In a case like that, now if he used some of that money for a personal expense, like he paid for his kids' college, or maybe he bought some clothes with it for himself, bought food, food, clothing, shelter. Those are typically personal expenses.
Right.
If he took five of that $10,000 and spent on personal things, or put it in the savings account, his own personal
and nothing, account. There's nothing now, wrong with that. He just has to pay taxes on it.
Yeah, that'd be taxable. But if he's using it for most of the things he probably used it for, he bought backpacks for people, or he did whatever, that would be a deduction. And even a lot of, I just mentioned the food, clothing, and shelter. If it's clothing for himself, that would be personal. If it's clothing he gave to people, that, of course, would be a ministry deduction. If it's shelter, your main house is typically a personal expenditure other than the portion of it that you use for business purposes, that you use it for ministry purposes, like you meet with, I call them customers, but you meet with people or you have an office. That portion is a deduction. But if you have two residences, one in, let's say, your country and one in the U.S., one of those houses, the entire cost of that is probably a write-off, is a deduction. Food, when it comes to food, if you're out with somebody and you talk about a ministry, that's a deductible expense, whatever you spend on food. If you're just eating by yourself, that's not a deduction. If you're traveling, you can take a per day allowance. So most things in your life as a missionary are a deduction. It's kind of unusual. And I want to mention one other thing as far as records that you keep.
Right.
You're typically supposed to keep if you're ever audited, which is probably about a 1% chance, but if you do get audited, there's certain you have to either have a canceled check, maybe a credit card statement, maybe a receipt to back up your expenditures that you're deducting. And there's three exceptions where you do not need receipts. And one is, we talked earlier about an out-of-town. All your meals you eat when you're out of town, you can just take a per day allowance. No receipts required. A second thing is when you're in town and you're eating, you don't have to have a receipt. Like you go out with somebody and spend $50 on a meal. You just write it in your calendar. I spent $50 at Del Taco or whatever it is. And that's sufficient. As long as it's under $75, you don't have to have a receipt. Over $75 in town, then you do have to have a receipt.
Well, let me ask you. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, the third thing, what?
The third thing that you do not need a receipt for is mileage. If you have a vehicle.
Really?
You have a choice of taking actual vehicle expenses or a mileage rate.
Wow.
A mileage rate would be. I drove 10,000 miles last year. I could take a standard mileage rate of about 57 cents a mile. So that would be a $5,600 or $5,700 deduction that I could take without any receipts. And so those are your three types. But everything else, technically, you need to have some kind of record to prove upon an audit.
Let's say, on that note... And that is awesome information. And again, it's information that I would say the majority of missionaries don't know. And in the case that I just read, evidently it seems to me they didn't know that. But for instance, in most developing nations, they used to call them third world nations. I don't like that phrase either, because everybody's a first-rate citizen with God. But in developing nations, the whole idea of receipts is hard to come by. So let's say that a missionary, let's use this example here. Let's say that he had collected and donated whatever it was, $5,000, $10,000, towards construction or the operation of a boys' home or whatever the case may be. Can they just try to get a receipt from that group in writing, even if it's in Spanish or whatever language it may be in? Or what should they do? Because, you know, it's not like a cash register that's going to generate a receipt. What is your idea on that?
That's a great question. I think when you're talking about a cash transaction, it's great to get that person to say, give you an invoice or just write on a piece of paper, I received $500 for such and such. That would be a sufficient receipt. In those examples, when you're doing your taxes and you're using, let's say, a professional to prepare your taxes, the professional does not want you to send in those receipts.
Okay.
He just wants you to write down, this is how much I spent on ministry materials or giving food to people. What the professional will want is a copy of your last year's tax return, your prior year's tax return. You'll want any 1099 or W-2 that's reported to the IRS. You'll want a copy of those. The third thing that the professional will want is you to really write down, these are my expenditures, and not with receipts, but this. And then the professional is going to go and look at those and say, wow, I don't see any office in the home expense, or I don't see any health insurance premiums, or whatever it is. They're going to look at those things that you've missed.
Well, that's where your expertise comes in, because of your history with missionaries like Kelly all over the world. You think like this. I would venture to say, now I might get myself in trouble saying this, but there's a lot of accountants out there who are professionals. They have the right training, but they don't have the experience in this particular niche called missionary work. And they may not think of these things like someone like you does. And evidently, from going back to this example, and this guy's an awesome worker. He's one of our best workers, and I feel bad that he may have paid taxes that he didn't have to. But somebody should have jumped in there and said, "Hey, wait a minute. Some of this can probably be, you know, listed on the Schedule C, et cetera, et cetera." That's exactly what you're saying, right?
Yes, and I think when someone's looking at an accountant, there's kind of two things you want to look for. One is you want them to ask you a lot of questions. You don't want to be asking all the questions. If your accountant isn't asking you lots of questions, they're probably very busy with other things.
And that's good.
You probably want a different accountant. And the second thing is, do they have experience with missionaries and in particular foreign taxation issues?
Okay.
Now, your accountant typically will not know the detailed laws of, you know, the 100, and I don't know how many countries there are now, 160 countries or whatever they are. They're not going to know each. And in that case, the missionary should actually talk maybe with other missionaries in their country, or even find an advisor if they're missing some kind of, if they're in Guatemala, a person in Guatemala is going to be most qualified to advise them if they have any Guatemalan tax issues. Your U.S. accountant probably won't be able to help a whole lot in that area. And so sometimes, a lot of times, that Guatemalan missionary can ask other Guatemalan missionaries that have been there a long time, or try and find some kind of help there if they have questions about that.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you on the receipt issue. Now, I want to move on to several other areas in a moment, but so the accountant, a professional, doesn't want the receipts. He just wants a list of expenses, and then he should start asking questions to help, you know, in case you've overlooked something. But it is the responsibility of the missionary to have receipts to back up what he's listing. And so those of you listening, you want to start keeping receipts, just have a file and have a folder in that file per year, and your receipts to document what you're listing out on the Schedule C needs to be there. Let me ask you this, just an idea, and Kelly, you might want to jump in on this, but let's say somebody wants to give, let's just pull a figure out of the air, $3,000 to a boy's home in XYZ country. Would it behoove the missionary to write a check, even though it's a U.S. check, write a check to the home, and then of course that organization would have to deposit it in their account and take the hit on the conversion at the bank from U.S. dollars into whatever, let them take the hit. But would that be a good record that they made it out to that organization or not?
I personally, as a missionary, I would discourage it. For one thing, when they go directly to the field, they lose accountability, and they might appear to be well-meaning, but we've often had donors saying, "Well, let's not go through world outreach, let's just send it out to the field." And I said, if you want to do that, you'd be at risk. I can't guarantee.
No, I'm not talking about the donors. I'm talking about the missionary themselves. In other words, the funds have already passed through World Outreach. They've already been deposited into the missionary's account. So the missionary themselves on the field want to support that boy's home. What's the best way to pass the funds to that boy's home?
Oh, they would do it in the local currency, and they'd probably get a receipt.
In cash. Okay, okay.
Yeah, and get acknowledgement for it. And I think it's like what Brian said about your missionary in Central America. Any funds that come for a project, if it comes in, it's income to him. But as Brian mentioned, if he spent it all on the Ezekiel Boy's home, then it all goes out as expense. There's nothing left over that's taxable. Your missionary had no income. What came in went out. There's no residual that's taxable. If he kept some for himself for personal well-being, that may be taxable.
Okay, excellent. Excellent information. Now,
and Jason, one thing about records, you know, how long do you keep a record? basically it's 3 years from the time you file your tax return.
3 years.
If you look at 2016 we're in right now, the due date of your tax return will be April 15th, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You file your tax return then. You need to keep those records until April 15th, 2020.
Okay.
3 years past the due date of your tax return. And then at that point in time, you can get rid of those records if you would like to. But you do want to keep those for 3 years. Certain expenses you might have to keep longer if it's to justify an investment in something that you might sell 10 years from now. I mean, if those are fairly rare, but certain things you want to keep, like the purchase of your house. You want those records, obviously, for longer than that. But 3 years is your general rule.
Okay. Wow, excellent information on the Schedule C. And those of you listening to this, that to me is one item at the top of the list. If you haven't been using the Schedule C, then as you can tell from our interview here, you're missing out and you're paying taxes that you don't really need to be paying, because the IRS allows the Schedule C form for qualifying expenses. Now, let's jump tracks here. Brian, talk to me about the foreign income exclusion. A lot of missionaries don't understand this, and I'm not sure I entirely do. There's a certain number of days, I think, you have to be out of the country. Am I right in qualifying for this? But it's huge. I mean, if you qualify for this, the foreign income exclusion is it's a slam dunk.
Yes, it's a great exclusion. It's a great tax benefit, and actually, missionaries that are making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year, they're probably not going to need this exclusion.
Okay.
They're going to instead not take it, and then take advantage of earned income credits and other types of tax benefits that you actually don't get if you file the exclusion. So you kind of want to look at which one's better. You always run a tax return with the exclusion, without the exclusion, to see what's the best tax.
Okay, that's good. That's good that you know the fine lines between that.
But with the exclusion, it's $100,000. You can make $100,000 plus. It adjusts each year for inflation, so it's over $100,000 right now. I don't know the exact number, but that amount that you earn abroad is excluded from your income taxes, and you could make $130,000, have $30,000 of Schedule C expenses, so now you're at $100,000, and that's all excluded from income tax. We mentioned earlier, it is not excluded from Social Security tax.
Okay, say that again. Say that again. I want everybody to hear that.
Yeah, so the foreign income exclusion gets you out of all federal and state income taxes. It does not get you out of Social Security taxes.
Okay.
And that's a really important concept that people go, God, why am I paying some taxes? Well, you're not paying any income taxes, but you still are subject to Social Security taxes. To qualify for the exclusion, we're not going to get too technical here, but just briefly, there's two ways to qualify. One is the physical presence test. It means you were outside the U.S. for 330 days out of the 365 day period.
Wow!
And that doesn't. If I'm filing my 2016 tax return, I can take any 12 month period. I can go from March 1 to March 1, June 1 to June 1, and I look at that 12 month period. And if I'm out of the country for 330 of those days, then I qualify for the exclusion automatically. If you do not qualify for that exclusion because you were, 50 days in the U.S., then you can also qualify what's called a bona fide residence test. And so even though you're only half the time out there, you can still qualify for the exclusion on this other test. It's a little bit more stringent if you're telling that foreign country that you're exempt from all foreign taxes because you're U.S. and then you have a problem qualifying. You're trying to tell them, I'm a U.S. resident, but I'm also telling the IRS I'm a foreign resident, so you have to kind of watch it a little bit there. If you don't qualify for that 330-day rule, there's another way to do it, but you have to be a little bit more careful.
Okay. Well, we have some of our missionaries that would qualify for that, and then some that wouldn't. We have some families that literally, it's like, pardon the expression, they go native. I mean, they move to another country, and they are totally absorbed into that nation and rarely return to the United States. And they figured out ways to continue building their support base, especially in today's time, through the Internet, through emails, through e-newsletters, contact here in the States that are doing missionary receptions for them, even though they're not physically present. Some of them are doing them remotely by Skype, and they greet the group in the home. And it's an amazing way to build your support without having to return. But I would say it's a small percentage. You know, generally, these are people that have perhaps married a national, and they just... that's their country, and they don't want to come home to the United States. Very rarely do they come, but there's some people that would qualify for that.
Those people may be exempt even from Social Security taxes. For example, if you live in Spain and you've been there, and you're actually paying into the Spain Social Security tax system, Spain and the U.S. have a treaty.
Okay. Tax treaty.
You only have to pay You only have to pay Social Security tax to one of the countries. If you're paying it into the Spanish system, you don't have to pay it into the U.S. system. And the U.S. has treaties with all of the developed, the most developed nations like Japan or South Korea or France or whatever. And they have for the less developed countries, they have treaties with some of those countries, not all of them. So you don't have to ever double. We've talked about you don't have to ever double pay the taxes. You don't have to pay a double Social Security tax. And if you're paying income tax to a foreign country, you don't have to also pay that tax to the U.S. Now we're talking income tax. There's a thing called a foreign tax credit.
Is that that's the form 1116?
1116, that's right. Thank you for and what happens there is I'm paying taxes I'm in Guatemala and I'm paying some Guatemala taxes.
Right.
And then when I file my U.S. tax, I find out, gosh, I have income taxes I have to pay in the U.S. Well, whatever I paid to Guatemala, I can take that as a credit against my U.S. taxes, so I'm
awesome.
Not double paying income taxes. And so, again, those are income tax issues, not Social Security taxes.
Talk to me just briefly. Now, we've got a hustle here, but
yeah.
Talk to me briefly about the Form 2555, which is a foreign earned income exclusion. Now, I'm not sure I understand that clearly, but it's possible that you can deduct amounts that you perhaps have earned abroad. For instance, some of our missionaries, they have their support base here, and so they get a 1099 through World Outreach. But for instance, we have one family in Hong Kong that I'm thinking of, and he is a part-time pastor for a local congregation there, so he receives more or less a stipend. I don't know how much it is, but he does receive income there. How would a Form 2555 possibly help him?
Well, that is the form for this foreign income exclusion, the 330-day thing that we just talked about.
Oh, okay.
That's the form you fill out to take that exclusion.
Oh, okay.
Your Hong Kong missionary would his income, both from World Outreach and from what he's doing as a pastor in Hong Kong, would all be exempt from income taxes because of this Form 2555, the foreign income exclusion.
Okay. You know, those of you listening, you can tell this stuff gets complicated. And the thing about the tax code, I mean, I'm a rook, okay? I'm a layperson trying to help missionaries here, but that's why we've turned to O'Brien and Kelly on this. But the tax code, it's like a puzzle that constantly is shifting. I mean, they're changing the tax code all the time. So to try to get online with a program and do it yourself, I'm sorry. I think you're gonna I think you're going to miss out on so many opportunities that are afforded by the IRS that you could minimize your taxes. Quickly, talk to me about Obamacare. The election's coming up, so I don't know what it's going to be called in the future. But this, the whole health care system, talk to me about that.
You know, as most of most people are aware, there's an extra tax or penalty to many taxpayers if they are not covered with health insurance. And there's exemptions if you have low income, and there's also exemptions if you lived abroad during a given month. If you lived, and so even if you do not have health insurance, you don't have to pay a penalty if you are living abroad. So most missionaries are going to be exempt from Obamacare. They may want to. Most missionaries don't make a lot of money, and a lot of them will want to try and qualify for the marketplace and get, you know, favorable insurance through that. But they won't, if they do not get health insurance, they're most missionaries will be exempt because they live abroad.
Okay. All right. One last question. I mean, we could just go on and on this because this is such an extensive subject, but I really can't thank you enough for participating in this interview. It's going to help so many missionaries get headed in the right direction, and if they're smart, they'll contact your office, go to a professional tax preparer who has experience with missionaries. But, Brian, one last thing. Do you have in your mind like a percentage? A lot of missionaries, when they figure up their budget, you know, they're figuring up the cost that I'm going to have to spend in Germany or Costa Rica or wherever they may be going, and most of them underestimate. And you know what? They never think about the taxes. So to be on the safe side, is there a percent that a missionary might factor in? In other words, let's say, I'm just going to pull a figure out of the air, let's say they come up with, hey, my first year's budget, I need $3,000 a month. You know, and they haven't even thought of the whole tax issue. Now they're thinking about it. What's a percent that they might factor into their budget to protect them from getting caught?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think your question is for the safe side. That person making $3,000 a month is most likely not going to be paying any income taxes, you know, because of the exclusion that we talked about, the deductions. But they will probably be subject to Social Security tax, which is a 15.3% rate.
Okay.
I would probably, in your budget, budget 15% of that $3,000 a month potentially going to taxes.
So add an additional 15% in.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. And one thing, Jason, I did want to mention is these people, missionaries, can feel free to contact our office with a question, and we generally answer questions with no charge. And if it's a more complicated one, we got to run numbers, get out the pencil and stuff. Yes, we might have a charge for that. But the typical question, just send us an email. It's brian@tax.com. It's BRIAN. At tax with two X's, TAXX.com. And we'll get back within a day, at least, and answer your questions. And just feel free to do that. And another thing, you know, a lot of people ask, how much does it cost to do income taxes? And that really depends on, you know, the person might have a rental property, the person has, you know, what are all these issues that can happen. More than half of our missionaries are fairly basic, and this basic charge we have is $200. It's the regular return, and more than half of them are qualify in that situation. Just to give an idea of what.
Well, and that's charge. that is, even if it's a little bit more than that, that's an awesome rate. And you know, when you compare that with this email we read earlier, where they had to pay over $3,000. And that's what we're saying. I mean, $200 is nothing, because you're most likely going to save them on the Schedule C and the foreign income exclusion, these other items we've talked about, way more than that. And I can attest to that, being in the ministry myself 38 years. I look back and I'm so glad that early on I started using, professional people. Now, I wasn't smart enough and nobody was telling me in the beginning to contact somebody who had experience with ministries, or missionaries. And that's why I keep saying this over and over. You know, there's different accountants out there and I'm sure they're all well intended and trained, but this is a niche, and the missionary area is something that you guys specialize in. So I want to emphasize the importance, again, to everyone listening, to use a professional tax preparer. We've been saying it, and I've been repeating it, because it's going to save you money in the long run, and you're going to know, you're going to have the peace of mind. I mean, you can't put a price tag on knowing that my taxes were done right. And Brian mentioned his contact info, but all that and his phone numbers, his email address is listed. Again, I want to give it out. It's worldoutreach.org/resources. If you just type that in and then scroll down, you'll find the section on income taxes, and you'll find Brian Stevens' contact, O'Brien and Kelly LLC, listed there. And all the contact information is there on how you can initiate a contact with them. Also, finally, those of you listening, some of you may be missionaries who are not World Outreach missionaries, and you need a dependable home office. Let me give a plug here. That's what we do. I mean, we have over 400 families now around the world that we are the home office for, and help them administratively. And so you will want to go to our website, which is worldoutreach.org. It's really the same address as before, except without the slash resources. It's worldoutreach.org, and all the information is there, how to contact us, etc. And we'd love to help you go to the next level with your missionary work. Brian, thank you. Kelly, thank you guys so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. It's been great always talking to you, Jason. Kelly?
Thank you. God bless you, Jason.
All right. God bless you guys. And until next time, blessings to everybody. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.